There's a lab in the Upside Down. They're restarting Papa's program, trying to make new numbers.
The military? Okay, so after we kill Vecna, we destroy this new lab, end the program, like a little side quest.
Mike, no, you don't understand.
They don't need a lab to make new numbers.
Henry's blood. It's in me. I'm not a monster. I know that now. But with me, with my blood, they can make more monsters. They can make more Henrys.
The military will always be looking for you. We've always known that, which is why we aren't staying in Hawkins. When this is all over, we're leaving, escaping to some far-off land. Remember? Somewhere where they can't find us. Somewhere where there's at least one waterfall.
Mike, this isn't like one of your campaigns. You don't get to write the ending. Not this time.
Maybe I don't. But we do. You, me, Lucas, Will, and Dustin. Because this is our story. And it starts with getting Will back.
Greetings, stranger friends, and welcome back to Stranger Danger, where today we will be talking about Stranger Things 5, Chapter 6, Escape from Camazotz. And let me tell you, friends, we are running out of time. It is almost here, the 31st. The finale is almost here. I see tomorrow they're putting out the final trailer for the finale, and I have to be honest with you, I just have to say it, I'm not going to watch it, and I'm not going to talk about it. It happens, I'm sure it'll be there, I hope everyone who watches it enjoys it. I don't want to see anything that I haven't already seen. If it wasn't in the original trailer, I don't want to know. I am keeping my eyes shut, my ears shut. And anything else that could, even if like a nose, I don't even want to smell anything that has to do with the finale until it gets here. Here's what happens on the 31st. On the 31st, I believe my wife and I are going to go, we're going to go spend some time shopping. We're going to go out to lunch. We're going to hang, we're going to hit a few shops again. Then we're going to get Chinese food with my parents. Then I'm going to be like, hi, family time. Spend some time with my wife and my dog. Then at 8 o'clock, I'm going to be like, goodbye, everyone. See you in 2026. Though I will wake up my wife at 11:30, probably 11:50, because she'll be out sleeping. I'll be hopped up, running around like a crazy person after that finale. And then we will watch the ball drop. And then I will probably start thinking about this episode, the finale episode, and podcasting about it. But when I say, friends, that we are so close to the end, that I don't want to waste any more of your time. I thank everybody who sent in comments. Noah, Fizza, Jess, I saw your comments. I appreciate it. I will eventually talk about them, but not right now. No. Right now, without any further ado, without any more time wasted, even while I'm explaining it and talking about not wasting time, I'm wasting time. Let's jump into it right now. As we go, oh, there goes the voice. There's no turning back now. As we jump into Chapter 6, Escape from Camazotz. So this episode was written by Kate Treffy, I want to say, Treffry, T-R-E-F-R-Y. That second R is throwing me off. Treffry. Anyway, she has written many Stranger Things episodes, including Season 2, The Spy, Season 3, The Sauna Test, Season 4, The Nina Project, and of course from Season 5, Escape from Camazotz, as well as she also wrote the stage play Stranger Things, The First Shadow. Interesting that should come up. And this episode, of course, was directed by the great Sean Levy, who I think the next time we'll see him, he will be directing a new Star Wars movie. Ooh, baby. So this episode picks up exactly where Shock Jock left us. Dustin is frantically trying to communicate with Jonathan and Nancy. He's running up the stairs. He's screaming at them, don't touch anything. Don't touch anything. Do not touch anything, but we know that didn't happen. We cut to them on the roof. We know Nancy took the shot, but nothing seems to happen at first. So Jonathan thinks maybe she missed. She didn't. So the sky above them seems to almost tear open. It somewhat seems to like resemble a gate, you know, with the red glow, but it also appears to be spinning and things are flying around like Death Eaters in there. There's like a tear in the fabric of reality, which maybe that's exactly what happened. It seems to almost pick up momentum and moves faster and faster, glowing brighter. And before Nancy and Jonathan can duck out of the way and hide, it just seems to burst. And they're thrown back violently. Inside the building, Dustin gets knocked over. It's almost like there's an earthquake. And then we see that the burst ripples out. It ripples out of the center almost like water. It starts a violent red and then morphs into like almost a cold blue. This cold blue wave of energy that just travels the entire length of the upside down, reaching all the way to the wall where Hopper, Eleven, and Callie watch it pass over the head and smack right into the wall. We go straight from there to Mr. Clark's house. Someone is frantically knocking on his front door and ringing his doorbell. He's woken up and he goes to open the door to find Erica and some guy. He has no idea who this is, but we know it's Murray. So Mr. Clark sees his prize student with some strange old guy, which she tried to say is his uncle. And he's like, I'm the babysitter. You could see why he's almost like, what the hell's going on here? Then they see this woman comes to the door, calls him Snookums. And once Murray hears Snookums, he is never going to let that go. Erica recognizes her right away. She's like, the librarian? And then Murray makes a fairly inappropriate comment about her shushing him. Mr. Clark seems to agree with me that was pretty inappropriate. So he tries to close the door and says, you know, I'll talk to you tomorrow. But Erica's like, Dustin is in danger. He's like, what kind of danger? Life or death danger? And of course, Murray says, what do you say, Snookums? He's like, you're going to keep playing with the librarian with the bookworm? Or are you going to build us a tracker and save your star student? Back in the upside down, we go to the lab where Dustin is basically tells us a huge answer about what the upside down actually is. And for someone who Steve says can never admit when he's wrong, he says right there that he was terribly, catastrophically wrong. He tells Steve that he found a journal, and he confirms, he says it's Brenner's journal, so we know that was Brenner's little office. He said that the key to destroying the wall is in that journal, but it's not a shield generator or dark magic. Vecna didn't make it. Science did. So there is something about destroying the wall in there. But the thing is, it seems like we don't want to do that after we find out exactly what it is. Dustin mentions exotic matter, a single source of energy that is holding that whole giant wall together. And he thinks Nancy just shot it. Steve still doesn't understand. He's like, well, isn't that what we want to do? We, you know, get through the wall? Like, that's not bad. Dustin's like, no, you're not listening. Vecna didn't make the wall. So he isn't on the other side, which means Holly and the other kids, they're not on the other side either. Nobody is on the other side. And they're like, what the hell is on the other side of that wall then? And we see back at the chapel, we see the ripple of energy. It stops. Then back at the lab, Steve asks again, what the hell is on the other side of that wall? And Dustin says one word. Death. We then see the beamer, Steve's precious beamer. It starts to shake in the wall. We're now out by the chapel and it gets sucked out into nothing. It seems like now that there's this giant vacuum effect, a vacuum that is sucking almost everything in, but it doesn't seem quite strong enough to actually pull like Hopper, Elle, and Kaylee off their feet. So they hide behind a structure, but then they see a gate open. Hopper's like, everyone get behind me and wait. And Elle's like, nope, no thanks. She jumps up. He's like, Jesus, what the hell? God damn it. All that. He basically is yelling, screaming, and she gets up and she just uses her powers. And it's kind of awesome because you think of her as like using her powers to push something away. Well, right now she's just pushing everything away and almost creating this wind shield that is just like completely, it's like almost a force field. It reminds me of like Fantastic Four. She's using her energy to push everything away from her that's coming at her. And it's making this nice force field around them. And they get closer and closer to the gate. In the lab, Dustin tells Steve that everything they have ever assumed about the Upside Down has been dead wrong.
This place, the Upside Down, it isn't another dimension. It's not another world. It's a wormhole, a bridge between two points in time and space, between our world and another.
And if the bridge collapses?
It will take us with it. All of us.
And then we see the other side of the wall. It is just this giant structure that is connecting basically what seems like two entities, two worlds, two realities. I'm not sure exactly what the two things are. I think Dustin said two worlds, but that's insane. It kind of resembles a mushroom cloud for like a nuke, but only that the mushroom is on the top and the bottom, both sides, which is crazy trippy. We move back and we see the massiveness of everything. It is humongous. And you can even see, like, towards the top, you see the red lightning going off. And then we see a BMW float by, past us, into the vast nothingness of oblivion as we get the opening credits. On many shows, I would hit skip intro and get right to the action, but not on this show, not at this time. I mean, we only have so many of these left, so I want to enjoy them all while we can. And when we cut back from those credits, we see that same floating door that Max and Holly went through to start their journey into Henry's memories. Only this time we see Max and Holly bursting out of that door back into the field, running as fast as they can, running and not stopping until they make it to the cave. And thankfully in there, they're safe. He can't get to them there, but that doesn't mean that he didn't follow them, because then we see Henry. He is in obvious pain from, you know, Will snapping his leg and everything like that. He looks like Mr. What's It again, but not the nice, kind version that he was using to trick the kids. This time he looks maniacal. He looks insane. He yells in there for Holly to stop, tells her to come back to him. He says that Max is a liar who has corrupted your mind, but Holly knows the truth.
No, you're the liar! I saw you! I saw what you really are! Molly! If you don't come back with me right now and rejoin the other children, I will have no choice but to hurt Max. I may even have to kill her.
Then why don't you? Huh? I'm right here! Oh, that's right. You're too scared of a stupid cave, you goddamn coward!
Things have changed, Max. There are now other ways to get to you. And Holly, when your new friend begins to suffer, and she will suffer, you can either return to me and end her suffering, or you can watch your new friend die. Her life is in your hands.
So while I was rewatching this episode, I thought, why does Vecna even care about Max now? Like, why does he have to get to her? He already used her. He already won. He already got everything he needed to get started. But then I realized, wait, it's not that he needs Max now. He needs Holly. He could actually have done everything he wants to do without Max. And now he's using Max as a leverage to get Holly to give in. So now it kind of makes sense why he goes through all this trouble to get to Max. It's to make Holly suffer or to get Holly to give in and come back to him. And he says there are ways for him to get to her, which I take as now he believes that he's able to get to Max's actual physical body. The screen goes black and we see the title card, November 6th, the day it all started, the day it all ends. We're at the radio station and that dead Demogorgon is still nailed down by the radio tower. It's smoldering. Inside, we see Will is still unconscious, but his eyes, they're racing back and forth. Joyce is right by his side and you have to wonder, is she feeling some like serious guilt right now? This was her idea, though he did save Max and he did save Holly, so I feel like it definitely was worth it. And I think Will would say the same thing. It's just they don't know that because Will isn't able to get out and tell them. In the other room, Lucas is just beside himself with what happened or how things turned out, really, because he's like, Will should be unplugged from the hive mind. Like, why didn't he wake up? How did he see Max if she's with Holly? And is any of this real? Like, is Vecna messing with their minds? Like, none of it makes any goddamn sense. But Robin has a theory. Assuming everything Will saw was real, that he saw Max and he saw Holly, she has an idea. She jumps up and she runs over to a wall of records. She pulls down three, one to represent each of them. She pulls down The Clash for Will, of course. She pulls down Tiffany for Holly, that makes sense. And of course, for Max, she pulls out the obvious Kate Bush. Robin was pretty great with all three of them, right on target. She goes on to say that each one of these, even though their bodies are all in three different locations, they share one thing in common. They're all unconscious. And what happens when Vecna captures you? What does he do? He puts you in a trance, which looks an awful lot like a coma. So it's funny. She takes like their bodies are the record sleeve and their minds are the vinyl itself. So she takes them out of the record holder and she places them all together. And her thought is Will is in a trance. Holly, wherever she is in a trance, and Max is not in a coma, and she never was in a coma. She's in a trance.
Just like Will, just like Holly. It is hitting me like a Whitney Houston high note. What if their minds are all in the same place? In Vecna's mind. Imprisoned. At least they were. If Will's right, then Max and Holly are now making a prison break. And if they succeed, they will return to their physical bodies. And Max will come back to life.
And they'll have been in Vecna's mind. Literally.
They'll know everything. I mean, they'll know where Will is.
Where the kids are.
They might even know what he's planning.
That's endgame.
The fate of the planet may very well rest in the hands of your comatose girlfriend and your baby sister.
It's worth one more shot, right?
It absolutely is worth a shot, Lucas. So think about this. They're thinking they could get a leg up if Max does escape, if Holly does escape. Not only is it great that you get them back, but they might know things that the rest of them are in the dark about, like what all the other kids are there for, how to get to the other kids. If Holly can get away, she can get the other kids, or at least get someone to go back to the other kids. In theory, you'd think that's how that would be able to happen. So it's definitely worth a shot. Like, they're thinking, well, Max might be trying to escape. Will said run. Maybe she's escaping now. They're like, get to the hospital right now. So Robin can't legally drive, but she's going to take Lucas, and they go to the hospital to make sure Max is safe and not alone when hopefully she wakes up. And Mike, he's going to stay around. He's going to stay behind with Joyce and watch over Will. And speaking of Will, we travel next into his mind, which then we see is actually trapped in Vecna's mind. But he's not in any sunny field with the rest of the Kamazots tots. No, no, no. He wakes up in the Hawkins Public Library. Really kind of a great place to spend a day in any normal circumstance. But for Will, this is exactly where Vecna originally had him in prison. So he must be looking around like, oh my God, it's happened again. And this time, Henry approaches. But he quickly gives up the facade and shows his true form. He asks Will if he remembers, and I love that he calls him William. Does it bring back memories? But I love that Will does not give in. Never during this interaction does he cower to Vecna. He's like, Max and Holly, they got away, didn't they? Did the leg slow you down? Like, he's almost taunting him. I love that. And Vecna's like, oh, you think you are clever, don't you? But remember, I'm the one who invited you in. You were my vessel. My spy, my builder. And at that, Will's like, what? Builder?
How do you think the tunnels came to be, William? You built them each and every night you slept. There is much power within you, but make no mistake, boy, they are my powers, and they are stronger than ever before. Much stronger.
So we see Vecna is hanging in that lair where he has all the kids. You know, originally, and he's hanging up much in the same way that he was inside the Creel house, only now he's in the lair, and it's like whatever thing is he's connected to, it seems like his tentacle vines, whatever the hell they are, is connected to something above him that's like beating like a heart, even though it looks like a big gross stomach, it's kind of beating like a heart. And we saw something like that originally when in the library, when he was pumping into Will with that, you know, the whatever grossness he was pumping in, which seems to be what he's doing now to all these 12 kids. I don't know, whatever it is, but he says he's much stronger than ever. And now at last, it's time for his vessels to lead them to a new world, to a better world. But Will still doesn't relent. He's like, too bad your world will never exist now that Max has one of your vessels. And that's where Vecna's like, there's more than one way to smoke a fox from its den, William. Because he needs to get Max so that he can get Holly back. And he tells William that you're going to help me. You're going to be my spy one last time. You're going to be my spy one last time. And Will's like, no, never. But Vecna didn't ask like, hey, could you spy for me? Just like before, he's just going to force the issue. And he says, the more you resist, the more you will hurt. And he does his big stupid claw thing over Will's face, and Will starts screaming, and like his eyes start bleeding, and he's screaming as we fade away. But that was another pretty big reveal, those tunnels all the way from season 2. Somehow Will constructed all of them telepathically when he was asleep. And I'm wondering, like, was that built telepathically, or Is he like tapping into the hive mind to direct the Demogorgons or the tentacles or the Demodogs to actually do the physical building? I don't know like exactly how that worked, but I love that we're getting all these big reveals in this episode alone. And now he says he's going to use Will to spy one last time. And of course, that refers all the way back to season 2, episode 6, The Spy. So it seems like Vecna will use Will to get to Max, to get to Holly. That is some Inception-level treachery.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back in Kamazots, Holly is still looking through the telescope, and again, she sees that the lens cap is on with that weird shape cutting through it. They keep showing that to us, so they're making sure that we do see it, that we do notice it. Max kind of snaps at her. It's like, what are you looking at that for? Like, Henry is full of it when he says there are other ways to get to me. She thinks that they should just hang out in the caves and wait to be rescued by Eleven. Max thinks that it was Eleven speaking through Vecna, and I mean, that does make total sense. Like, why would she suspect that anyone else would have that ability? Eleven's the one who came into her mind, you know, when she piggybacked through a frozen pizza dough freezer, right? So why wouldn't it be her again? But Holly's antsy. Like, she wants to try to figure things out. Max pleads with her to stop pacing because she's totally reminding her of her brother. Holly's like, okay, since we're here, we might as well talk. So she's trying to figure out, she's wondering why Henry won't go into the caves.
This prison.
Kamazots.
Sure. It's made up of Henry's memories, right? Including this cave. So I figured it's like, I don't know, a memory that for whatever reason, Henry doesn't want to face. Something traumatic. Except there's nothing in here that is even remotely scary, so maybe not. Anyway, that's my theory.
I like it.
Thanks.
And if you're right, maybe we can escape through this memory.
Holly's theory is that their traumatic memories, we got Max in the attic, Holly in her house, like those memories led them out of Kamazots, or they were about to leave them out of Kamazots, and maybe Henry's traumatic memory does that same thing. Max doesn't agree, though. She's like, there's nothing in here, and like those memories weren't just bad. They were the exact moments where Henry stole their minds. Like, he can't steal his own mind. That would make no sense. But Holly's quick to say, since when does anything make sense in here? She thinks, you know, maybe there's a secret passageway, or maybe there's something out there as she looks out beyond the cave opening. Max is like, yeah, there's a lot of sand out there. Just lots and lots of sand. Max has searched it, but not all of it.
You are not going out there. Holly, we're staying here and we wait for Eleven. End of story.
I don't think Henry was bluffing when he said there's another way to get to you. We have to find a way out of here before that happens. You coming? Or are you gonna let a child head into the desert unsupervised?
I take it back. You don't remind me of your brother. You are your brother.
So Holly heads off into the desert, and an annoyed Max can't do anything but follow her. Back at the squawk, Mike notices a hearse driving up. He's like, did someone call the funeral home? They both go outside and they see the car park, and out comes Hopper and Eleven and some other girl. They made it through the gate. they got out. And then they stole, well, you know what? They borrowed a hearse. And let's just hope that's the closest any of our heroes come to a hearse. Elle runs up, gives Mike a big hug. Hopper runs up, gives Joyce a big hug. Elle introduces Mike to Callie. Mike's confused. He's like, oh, where did you come from? Hop says it's a long story, so it's better if they just tell everybody all at once. Except that is everybody right now. They go inside to see Will, and Elle goes right to him. And Joyce, and really everyone, is hoping that Elle can go in there and find him wherever he is. Back in the Hawkins lab, Steve is worrying and wondering how long it takes a wormhole to collapse. Dustin thought it'd be instantaneous, which means either they're already dead or Nancy didn't completely destroy the exotic matter since, you know, they weren't sucked into oblivion. So Steve heads off to go find Nancy. Dustin's hesitant about how unstable the building could be right now, but Steve pushes on. He calls out to them on the walkie-talkie, but he hears nothing. Suddenly, they both look up into like this open space in the lobby, and they see straight up to that unstable, exotic matter going bananas. And Steve's only thought is, oh God, please tell me they're not up there. And you know what? They're not. Not anymore. They were, but it looks like where they were on the roof melted, and they ended up in some room that is getting more and more filled with this melted matter. I don't even know what to call it. Like the melt, it looks like I don't know. It like cream paint. It looks like paint, kind of melted paint, I guess. And you see some of it dripping on them. And I actually would have thought it'd be very hot in order to melt. But then the fact that like it isn't hot is even crazier, because it's not heat that's melting it. It's that exotic matter. And now that it's not hot, it kind of looks like it would be kind of fun to be in, almost like a giant mud bath. Just don't be in it when it dries. Oh, and don't get stuck in a room where the door is locked and stuff is just pouring in, because that's exactly what is happening to Nancy and Jonathan right now. Back at the Squawk, Elle is heading into the void as Callie watches on. She's just in, looks like, one of the studios with an eye mask on and headphones on. Hopper is down in the basement cleaning his wounds, and Mike is wondering about Nancy. Hop thinks they're probably just inconsiderate pricks, which is actually the best case scenario, considering, you know, they could be picked up by soldiers, something going to happen with the wall or with the vacuum or anything like that. But he doesn't actually think they got sucked through the wall. He's just confused. Like, Max, Holly, the wall, how does it all connect? They seem to be missing a big piece of the puzzle, but Mike is confident that those pieces are in Vecna's mind, and now they finally have a way to get in. But then Debbie Downer pops in to say that Jane hasn't found anything yet. She comes down and is like, she's struggling up there. Harper's like, okay, give her some time. But Callie, I have to tell you, I am liking her less and less the more time I'm spending with her. She's saying, oh, she's getting weaker, not stronger. Oh, you're the expert on Elle. You've known her for what, a day and a half? Callie's like, oh, longer than you, actually. We were raised together. Okay. I've known the guy I went to third grade with longer than I've known my wife. Guess who I know more with, because I spend more time with. So the length of time you spend with someone, Callie, when they were little kids, and then maybe a week when she was like, you know, a teenager. Sorry, that doesn't count to the amount of time that these two people have spent with her. And then she's like, and her name is Jane. I'm sorry, her name is whatever she wants to be called. Does she want to be called Jane? Does she want Mike to call her Elle? You know, I had friends in college who I called them by their first name. Other people call them nicknames. I felt like an idiot calling them nicknames, so I had to call them by the name that I knew him as. And that's how these people are. I am liking her less and less. And I love that Hopper's like, oh yeah, I know, Jane Hopper. Because she's my daughter. She's like, oh, I'm just here to help. She's like, oh, you're just here to help. Okay, I'm sorry. Thanks for your gratitude. I thought you thought this whole fight was pointless. And Mike's like, You said this whole thing was pointless? She said, I never said that. Oh, really? Well, that's how it sounded to me. I leave her alone with Elle for 2 seconds and you worm into her head. She's probably having trouble fighting because of you throwing her off track. And they're like arguing back and forth about who knows what's better for Elle. Callie's like, she was probably off track when, you know, she was off track when I met her because of your lies. Oh, I am getting so angry with her.
Everything I have done
is to protect her. Keep telling yourself that, but if you really want to protect her, she needs to know the truth, and she needs to be ready to deal with what's waiting for her on the other side of this. Killing Henry won't end this.
What the hell does that mean?
It means nothing. She's a child. She has no idea what she's talking about. She's talking a bunch of nonsense.
I think you know I'm not. But just as you lie to Jane, you also lie to yourself. You ask why I'm still here. I'm here to make sure that this never happens again.
Yep, it's official. I hate her. I hate the way that she talks to Hopper. I hate the way that she talks very much like everything I say is fact. And it's almost like she's talking down to these people she just met. And I really dislike, yeah, okay, she went through some crazy stuff at the lab. It's not these guys' fault. In fact, if it wasn't for Hopper and Elle, you'd still be there. So show a little gratitude, maybe, instead of telling them everything they're doing is wrong. And then at the end, she says, I'm here to make sure that never happens again. To me, that sounds like a threat against Eleven, or I'm sorry, against Jane, as you want to call her. Oh, this makes me so mad. The first time I watched it, it annoyed me. The second time that I watched it, it annoyed me. Now I'm listening to it again, and I'm like, oh my God, I am like, I'm getting enraged. I'm getting enraged in my chair. I need to calm down. Okay. And the fact that, like, you know, she says killing Henry won't end this. Like, what does that mean? And Hopper's like, it means nothing. You know what? It absolutely means something. Number one, Kelly's wrong. Killing Henry will end almost all of this as long as you keep Eleven away from the government. And, you know, it doesn't mean also that if they create all these new kids, doesn't mean they're going to, one of them is definitely going to turn into an evil wizard. It just means one of them might have powers. Eleven has powers, and she turned out quite all right. So killing Henry might actually end this and put an end to this. Just because, now, yes, you don't want these tests to happen, but it doesn't, none of that is an exact, none of that is definite. It just could, would, should, maybe. But what we do know is that there is a monster wizard out there and he must be stopped. And that is the most important thing. Not Kelly and her side mission of making sure this doesn't happen again. I am so enraged. I didn't write down any of these things in my notes. This is just me listening to this again. And I'm getting... Okay. Calm down, Mike. Calm down. Okay. All right. So after she says this, the lights start flickering. Okay. I'm going to collect myself. And Mike runs upstairs. He's like, Elle. He runs upstairs and Eleven can't find Will. Can't find me yet. But she's hoping with maybe with a little rest and a little fuel. And they're thinking if they get her that extra boost of the tank at the cabin, that might help. I'm still so angry at Collie. Over at the hospital, Robin and Lucas breeze by the receptionist as quickly as possible. They head to the elevator, but before Robin can get there, Vicky stops her and takes her off because she needs to talk to her, because apparently security and MPs are looking for her, something to do with maybe, I don't know, a bag of benzos that she took out of someone's room. Vicky says, it's time to come clean. And Robin nods. She agrees. It's time. Upstairs, Lucas gets to Max, puts on Cake Bush, cranks it, and says, Max, it's time to come home. He's ready, and he thinks she is ready too. Back at the lab, Steve and Dustin are making their way up towards the roof. Dustin's nervous because of how unstable things are. He wants to take it slow, but Steve wants to go as fast as possible and almost walks right into a section of stairs that melted away. While they're trying to get to Nancy and Jonathan, those two are still trapped in that room. The melting goo, the melting whatever you want to call it, it's still filling up the room. Nancy tries to break through a door, which she does, but that leads to a flood of more melt coming through. And now more of the ceiling caves in and it's just gushing in. And the only thing they could do now is just jump on a table and scream for help, help, help. Over at Hop and Eleven's cabin, yes, that's her name, that's what I'm calling her, Eleven, they're getting the tank ready for Elle to go into the void. Hopper goes in to check on Joyce and to let her know that they're almost ready and that Elle's going to fix this. He's going to fix this. They brought Will there too. He's in a bed now. And we do now see that Joyce is actually feeling a lot of guilt for what happened to Will. Like she finally put her trust in him and believed that somehow it would all work out. But then this happens, and it's like every choice she makes is wrong. And Hopper knows how she feels, but he wants her to know it's not her fault. Okay, part of being a parent is that you'll always have this constant reminder your whole life that every choice you've ever made has been wrong. He tells her it's not on her. It's not. Back in the main room, we see Mike is mixing the salt water in the tank, getting it ready. And Elle comes in, and I guess what's a new wetsuit that Murray got her? It's like, oh, Santa comes through again. You can see that Mike's just kind of making small talk, but he really wanted to ask her about, like, what Kylie said about this not being over, even if they kill Henry. And at first, Eleven tries to downplay it. She's like, it doesn't matter. But Mike persists. He's like, let me decide, okay? Friends don't lie or avoid. That's a cheat. So Eleven finally does tell him, and that's the clip I played at the beginning of the episode where she said, you know, there's a lab in the Upside Down. They're restarting the program, trying to make new numbers. He's like, okay, so we kill Vecna. We destroy the lab. End of program. Like a side quest. She's like, no, you don't understand, okay? They don't need a lab. They just need Henry's blood. It's in her. It, you know, she realizes she's not a monster. She knows that now. But with her, they could make more monsters. They could make more Henrys. Again, could, okay? It's all could. But right now you have a monster. That's the main focus. Even Mike's like, there's always going to be military, you know, looking for you. We know that. That's why we have to leave Hawkins. Remember, when this is all over, we're escaping off to some far land, somewhere that they can't find us, somewhere where there is at least one waterfall. And Eleven says, Mike, don't go chasing waterfalls. Okay, she didn't say that. She says, this isn't like one of your campaigns. You don't get to write the ending. Not this time. That's a clip right out of the trailer. But I love that Mike's like, well, maybe I don't, but we do. You, me, Lucas, Will, and Dustin, and Max. You left out Max, but that's okay because that's the original kids. 11 and these four kids are the original. And he says, this is our story. You're damn right it is. And it starts with getting Will back. I love that. I love it. And I love that Mike is not giving up. He's not relenting. He's not giving in. And he's not holding out hope for a happy ending. Remember, Mike is the heart. So they made a point to show that Kali was listening in on this the whole time. And maybe she's wondering, you know, how would Elle discuss the situation, or would she even say anything? Again, I don't trust her at all. And I do get where Elle is coming from, but Mike and the others are a part of this. And they do have a say in the writing of this ending. And there is a real part of me that believes that we're going to see a waterfall when all is said and done. We return to Will, who is still trapped, but he has these quick visions of the hospital. And now he knows who's in danger, and he says one name, Max. And speaking of Max, she and Holly are walking along when Holly takes out her telescope again, and Max comments, you know, you really don't need that because we're right by my cave. Holly's like, I know, but she told her to look through herself with the lens cap on. Now we see that cutout in the lens cap that we've seen all the way back when Holly was in Camazotz for the first time looking at the telescope, we see that cutout is in the exact shape of the cave. So Holly thinks it's a map. even though they don't see anything, you know, around that seems like it would be helpful, Holly still keeps moving around until the cutout of the cap lines up perfectly with the cave. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Holly stepped right onto a mine shaft, and she almost fell in. And now we see there's a ladder leading down to something.
That marks the spot.
So we go back to the hospital where Robin told Vicky everything. She finally came clean and told Vicky the truth about everything that's been going on. And you can see Vicky is pacing back and forth, seemingly trying to come to terms with everything Robin told her. But in reality...
Sorry, just a crazy day at work. Call you tomorrow. Sorry, there's another crisis at the squad. I mean, who works all night at a radio station? And who is stupid enough to believe that? Apparently me. Vicky, who's sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring while you're off with your friends getting high.
Getting high?
Come on, Robin. You are going through withdrawal.
You have the wrong idea. I am not on drugs.
Right, sorry.
Just look at me.
You have been busy with your friends hunting monsters. God, no. All right, maybe you even believe it yourself. With the amount that you were clearly on, if you just go cold turkey, it can cause confusion, paranoia, hallucinations.
These are not hallucinations.
I mean, okay. To be fair, Vicky's explanation makes a hell of a lot of more sense than Robin's if you're just looking at it from the outside. Like, okay, this person's on drugs, or a dark wizard is stealing children and putting them in a dream world. But Robin's like, yeah, that's exactly what's happened. Vicky, the Earth split in four. Military have taken over Hawkins. Is what I'm saying crazy? She's like, yeah, bad shit crazy. But she's not only angry, she's also worried. And she thinks that Robin isn't well. She thinks that Robin needs help. But at this exact moment, Robin just needs to get the hell out of there because they hear someone outside. Robin hears some military guys outside and this other worker's like, oh yeah, Robin Buckley, I just saw her in that room, and points at her. Robin's like, oh snap, closes the door. And she says, sorry, Vicky. Vicky's like, oh no. She's like, sorry, Vicky, gotta go. She heads out. And they're like, excuse me, Robin Buckley. And she tries to ignore the soldier, but then another one shows up in front of her and they're like, where do you think you're going? And I'm thinking to myself, seriously, are there any nice soldiers in Hawkins at all? Like, did they say, you know, I need this elite group, not really elite, but I need, give me the worst of the worst and bring them to Hawkins. It seems like Ramirez was the closest thing that we had to someone who's kind of nice, but he is extremely dead. Everybody else, all assholes. Back at the lab, Jonathan and Nancy are stuck. They're stuck. There's nothing they can do except scream for Dustin, scream for Steve, scream for help, scream anything. And Dustin and Steve, they're trying to get to them. So, you know, that those stairs that melted through, Steve goes to grab a ladder. And at first I'm thinking, oh, good, he can put a ladder down into the room and get them. But I forgot, oh, wait, he hasn't gotten to them yet. So his plan is to put a ladder over the gap in the steps, that gap that just melted away, so he can climb over them. He puts the ladder in, it seems pretty secure, and he's about to do it. But thankfully, Dustin stops him.
What the hell are you doing? That's never going to work. Stop! Steve! Stop! I'm serious! It's not safe! You're gonna fall!
It's unstable! I got it already, okay?
Please. No, don't! Stop! Being an asshole!
I'm not being an asshole! I'm trying to get to them!
You're always trying to get yourself killed, and I can't let it happen again! Stop being so selfish, please! If you go on there, you're gonna die, and I can't deal with it again! You can't die because I can't deal with it again! Don't let it happen again! Please! Please don't let it happen again! Not you! I'm sorry!
No.
You heard that clang at the end, right? That was the ladder falling through the stairs there. A little more melted away. That ladder fell down many, many, many floors. Yes, thank God Dustin stopped Steve. He just saved his life. And in doing so, he apologized for his attitude. And in doing so, you could see their relationship is bigger than just any one fight. And you could just see they're going to be okay. I loved that because it kind of brought them back together, back on track. And it also it washed away the fight. It kind of washed away the attitude that I think the fight might have washed away the attitude too. But I think with everything going on and then this moment, it just solidified them that they're okay. You know, they're on good terms again and they truly do love each other. They really are like best friends. And the only problem is it doesn't bring them any closer to Jonathan and Nancy, who are still stuck on that table, still screaming for help. And they're screaming for help that may not be coming. That table they were standing on, it's starting to sink now. It's definitely unstable. So they sit down so they can spread out their weight. And, you know, it seems like they're starting to think that they may be running out of time. Like, maybe they heard them, but if they didn't, this may be their last moments together. Their last moments alive. They stop yelling. They just spend some time together. And they talked earlier about being honest with each other. It feels like now they just decided that's what they're going to be. And Nancy goes first. She's like, I hate the Clash. He's like, what? I hate the Clash. She says, every time you put them on, I just disassociate from reality. He says, I hate reading your articles. She's like, what? It's like, you don't want my thoughts. You just want me to tell you how great they are. She's like, yeah. It's because they are great. And I like she says that not in a cocky way, almost like laughing. And it's cute the way they're doing this. He's like, yeah, most of the time. She's like, most? Okay. So she says, I never read Slaughterhouse-Five. He must have suggested that to her. She read the Cliff's Notes. They say Cliff Notes, I think. But isn't it Cliff's Notes, I believe? The plural or the possessive? He's like, I never read Anna Karenina. I just read the Cliff's Notes. Guys, I never read either of them. But I will someday read a book where Nancy is a character in it. But Slaughterhouse-Five, Anna Karenina, never read them and probably never will. But she's like, you're always late and I never say anything, but I want to punch a wall. He says, I took back your pink sweater. I brought it to Goodwill. I hate pink. She's like, I was looking for that. It was, but I felt guilty. Okay. If it makes you feel better, I did feel guilty about this. She talks about flushing his last bag of weed down the toilet, and she didn't feel guilty about that. He's like, oh, my God. She says, I hate when you're high. He says, I hate when you're drunk. But most of all, I hate when you're high and I'm drunk. And they're like, why do we do this? And they share a laugh, but you can also see there is some sadness here, almost like they're coming to a major point. Now, they think they're coming to that point of their life. But Jonathan, he finally admits to her that he never applied to Emerson. Nancy knew that already. She figured it out, but neither of them said anything to each other about it. He just said that he felt like he was doing something wrong, like he was going against the natural order of things. And they talk about their shared trauma, that thing that ties them together forever. Like, it made them feel safe, but also, and Nancy's like, yeah, it can also be suffocating. And Jonathan agreed. Nancy said that when he was in California and she said that she had to stay behind for work, she didn't really have to. Like, Fred could have covered for her. Also, Nancy, it's a school newspaper. So, yeah, you probably didn't have to. But she said she just felt like she needed some space. And Jonathan just came out and said it.
Space to be with someone else.
He makes me laugh. And he has better hair than you, like way better. But no, it was never like that with him.
When Jonathan said space to be with someone else, my niece audibly gasped. She was like, oh. And when Nancy said Steve's a good guy, I almost did too. But you heard her. She said, it's not like that with him. It never was. They're just different people. She told Jonathan about Steve's dream of having six kids. Six little nuggets. You know, I thought about that for a second. Steve wants six kids? He already has them. The name are Mike, Dustin, Lucas, Will, 11, and Max. So now he just needs an RV and a waterfall. Oh, we can dream. But her point is, Steve knows what he wants, and that's great. But Nancy, she doesn't. And she was hoping, you know, maybe she'd have time to figure that out. But then the world split in four, and now they think this is the end. They look around. They think these are their final moments. So Jonathan figured,
one last confession. A big one.
John Coltrane.
I figure that I have screwed up enough with you. It'd be nice to get something right for once in the end. Here. Nancy Wheeler. You not marry me? I tried to convince myself that this would somehow fix everything, but it was just gonna make things worse, which is why it has been sitting like a cannonball in my pocket for the last 2 days. So what do you say? Do you accept my own proposal?
I accept your own proposal.
I love you. I love you, Nancy Wheeler.
I love you, Jonathan Byers.
They embrace, and they're smiling and laughing and crying. Jonathan gives Nancy a kiss on the forehead. He takes the ring and he tosses it. And it lands with a clink. Wait. A clink? The melting. It stopped. Everything is dry. Everything is solid. They're alive. They're going to get out of this.
Jonathan! Oh my God!
Incredible. The other day I was at my friend's house, and both him and his son, they didn't realize at that moment that Nancy and Jonathan had broken up. The son said that he read in an article explaining later, and he complained that the show wasn't clear about it. Now, don't worry, I called both of them idiots, and I can do that, I can do that. He's 20, I've known him since he was born. His dad I've known since I was 3. They're basically family. So I can safely, with love in my heart, call them idiots to their faces. I said, I thought it was pretty clear to me that, you know, they love each other, but for right now, they know that it's better off if they went their separate ways. But you never know what time could bring. Now, I am right, right? Or am I the idiot? Like, they did. This is them saying, okay, we love each other, but now's not the time. I need my space. Let's not get engaged. You know, basically, they're saying, let's go our own ways, but not in a malicious way. It's almost like they've decided that they're just better off apart right now, right? I think, okay, I just wanted to make sure that I call my friends idiots on here. Even if they're not wrong, if it wasn't clear for other people, And I'm not saying it was 100% clear. I'm just saying I took it as that they've broken up and they've decided, you know, that they're Dunsky. She doesn't mean she's going to be with Steve. It just means she wants to be on her own, focusing on her own right now. And I hope to God I am right, so that my friend and his son can be continued to be called idiots. Idiots who I love dearly. And as I said, right now, I think they're broken up. But you just never know. You never know what time could do. You never know what separating for a while could do. You just never know. So back at the cabin, Eleven is in the tub and she's about to go into the void to try to find Will. She tells Joyce she will find him and she will bring him home. She goes into the void and she approaches Will in bed. So she goes to the version of Will that she can access, which is the one, just the husk, the body, lying there in the bed in the cabin. And she asks him to show her where he is. And suddenly on the bed, all the tentacles, all the vines, I still don't know what to call them. I probably get them wrong every time, but they slither all around him, all over his body, all over the bed. And then we zoom in on his face, and now we're transported to where he actually is, or where his mind actually is, in the library. And Eleven, she just uses her powers to tear him free. She just rips it away, tears him completely free, and he collapses into her arms, but he is still unconscious. We go back to Kamazots, and you know, there's a lot going on in Henry's mind right now at this moment. Like, think about how many people he has in there doing different things, right? Max and Holly, they went down the ladder of that mine shaft in what I am calling, at least the first time I watched it, kind of one of the more annoying parts of this episode, this season, this entire series. Like, at first glance, this kind of really bugged me. Or I shouldn't say at first glance, at second glance. The first time I watched it, I wasn't sure what I was seeing, but on reflection, on rewatching it, on reading something about this, it kind of bugged me. Okay, but I'm not, let's wait on that. I'll get to that. So they get to the bottom of this ladder and they see some blood. They see a pair of glasses on the ground. So they know it's just a memory. They know nothing can hurt them. So they follow the trail of blood and until they see some dude with a briefcase and a gun. Now, this guy is credited as scientist in the IMDb. I wouldn't know that. I don't know what this guy's down there for, but I do know that he's got a briefcase in his hand and a gun. I do recognize the actor. His name is Frederick Kohler. Now, I knew him as a kid actor. He was one of the kids in the movie Mr. Mom from back around this time. This was like 83, maybe like that. Something like that. He was also on a TV show called Kate and Ally, which was a sitcom in the 80s. You know, he's a grown man and he's got a gun and he's got a briefcase and he's yelling, "How did you find me?" And he's pointing the gun right at Holly and Max. Holly's like first she thinks that he sees them, but then they realize he's actually looking at someone behind them. And they turn to see a young Henry Creel in his Boy Scout uniform. He's like, "I won't hurt you. Please, mister, don't shoot."
"Who are you?"
"Henry. Henry Creel. I live near here."
"They sent you."
"Nobody sent me."
"They sent you."
"I was in the caves. I heard a scream."
"They sent you."
"You're just confused. You need a doctor."
This guy sees a young Boy Scout offering to help him, and he shoots him right in the hand. I say the kid is right. This dude is confused. So this guy shoots Henry right in the hand, and Henry looks at his hand. He's kind of in shock, and the guy seems to be in shock too. He goes to reload his gun, And the boy runs up, holds down his arm, and he's like, please. That was like freaky when he's like, please, please. Like, this kid was a really good actor for the moment he was in this, the way he was saying please. And the gun's turning on him. And finally, he pushes the gun down. The gun falls down. And Henry just grabs a rock and he's like, now I bash your brains in. And he bashes him over and over and over again. And Max grabs Holly and is like, gets her out of there before they can turn a corner and come to an area where there's nothing but rocks covering what they thought might have been an opening, what they thought might have been a way out. Holly asks, like, why did that man try to hurt Henry? He was only trying to help. Is that what made Henry bad? Like, you can tell, you could see that this was really affecting Holly. And Max is like, I don't know, but it's over now, okay? We have to keep moving. Like, she's not focused on the memory. She's focused on trying to find a way through, trying to find a way out. Holly goes back around the corner and she sees more of the memory. She sees Henry covered in blood, kneeling over this man who is clearly dead. He drops the rock and he seems to be in shock of what he did. Now, Max, again, is busy trying to clear these rocks away from the dead end, and then she hears it. She hears Kate. Holly's still watching Henry's memory. Henry is curious to what this guy was trying to protect. He opens the briefcase. He unlocks it. We see it open. We hear a slight hiss, and we see almost like fog coming out of it, like dry ice, and then nothing. Max comes back to get her, says Holly was right. This is the way out of Kamathots. It's here. But going back to what we just saw, like what we saw with the briefcase and that scientist, if we don't get anything else from that memory, if that's all we get, I have to say I find that disappointing and a little annoying. From what I know, this is related directly to the first Shadow, the stage play, which, as I mentioned, was also written by Kate Treffry. Treffry. Again, I don't know the pronunciation, the writer of this episode. And to have that connection is fine, but if it's just a little like, hey, play fans, see how this connects, and we get no further explanation on that, I don't like that. Like, okay, if it's not all that important, fine. The big memory was Henry killed a man, but he's killed before, killed half his family. Now, that was a little later in life, I guess, right? But what is so terrible about his memory that he won't face? And I read a couple things on that. I was like, should I know this? Do I have to know this? Is there going to be some sort of explanation? Like, I don't even want to say what it is I saw. And you could look it up if you want to. And I don't even know if I'm glad that I saw that. I'm annoyed that I saw an article saying, oh, this was the connection. And I'm almost like, well, now if we do get more explanation, was I spoiled on that? And I guess if we do get a little more information, I take back everything I said. The finale is over 2 hours, so hopefully we get something on this. Because if that's all we get, if that's like, if you want to know more, go check out the play. I just don't love that. So hopefully we get something more, some explanation, some confrontation as to why Henry is afraid of that. But anywho, Max and Holly keep pulling rocks away over and over, trying to get closer to an escape. Max can hear Kate. I'm assuming Holly can't, because that's Max's way out. But what will Holly's be? In her hospital room, Lucas is starting to see Max's eyes fluttering and rolling back and forth. Her heart rate shoots up. And then we get a little flashback back to when Vecna said to Will,
you are going to spy for me one last time.
He mentally tortured Will to find out exactly where he'd been when he visited Max in the hospital, the exact room, and then he said, found you. He gloats. Oh, now back in the present, Will wakes up. Well, okay, not really wakes up. He wakes up from that vision into his mind, still inside Vecna's mind, but he's back where 11 is, and he's freaking out. She's trying to calm him down, trying to say it's okay, trying to say, you know, it's okay, it's okay. We're going to bring you home. It's going to be okay.
I tried to stop him, but I couldn't.
He saw what? What did he see?
He knows where she is now, and he sent them after her. They're coming for her in Hawkins.
Elle immediately pops out of the tank and goes and checks on Will. He's awake. She got him out of the trance, and then she tells them all, we have to get to the hospital right now because Vecna is going to kill Max. At that very hospital, the military police are taking Robin away. Vicky is yelling after them that she's in withdrawal and she needs to be in a hospital. And oh, look, she's in a hospital right now. Those asshole MPs are like, this is Hawkins, okay? This isn't our first junkie cold. But then the lights start to flicker. And really, Robin is the only one who knows what that means. Well, I say that, but also Karen Wheeler sits up in her bed. And I seem to remember she has some experience with these creatures now.
Power outage in the hospital. Can't be good for Granny.
Not our problem. No, you don't understand. We need to evacuate right now.
We don't need to do shit.
Keep moving, junkie.
Yes, I'm not a junkie. And if we don't get everyone out here right now, we are all going to die.
The MPs continue to argue with Robin, who is doing her best to put up a fight. And then Vicky notices something approaching around the corner. It's a demo dog, and it sees them, and the soldiers start shooting at it, so it attacks and kills both of them pretty quickly. And I have to say, not since Brenner in season one have I rooted so hard for any sort of Demogorgon. Robin and Vicky both run, but it seems like they're cornered. Until the demo dogs go right past them and right up the stairs.
They're not after us.
Huh? What?
They're not after us. Do you know another way out?
The basement. The basement. At least it's not parking.
Robin tries to call up to Max's room, but Lucas isn't picking up.
What are you doing?
Can those things understand English?
No.
Then this doesn't need to be private.
So Vicky turns on the intercom.
Lucas, it's Robin. A demo is headed your way. Do you hear me? A demo is headed your way. You need to get Max out of there now. Take the elevator. They're on the stairwell. We'll meet you in the basement.
The lights start flickering in Max's hospital room, but she's still not awake. We see the demo dogs are now marching down the hall. They barge into the room only to find it empty. And then we see Lucas running down the hall with the radio in his hand and Max in his arms. Karen decides at this point it's a good time to check herself out of the hospital, and she yanks out her IV. Back upstairs, Lucas finally gets to the elevator, gets it to open, only to see the demo dogs charging straight for them. And is there anything slower than an elevator door when you're in a hurry? The lead demo dog leaps right at them, and Lucas karate kids its ass back out through the door just as the elevator closes. He got away from them and he's heading down to the basement. Back in Kamazots, Max gets another stone out of the way. There is a space, but it's not really that big. We can see the red sky of their way out. It's so close. They have to keep going. They have to try. Holly's able to squeeze through that space first, makes it through okay. Then she starts to pull Max through, who is struggling, but they do not give up. In the hospital, Karen is also struggling to get to her feet, struggling to walk out of the room. But before she leaves, she can't help but notice a bunch of oxygen tanks. We've all seen Jaws, haven't we? Now, Lucas makes it to the basement okay, with Max still in his arms. Like, I get tired carrying two bags of groceries in from my car. This kid is showing amazing cardio here. They run directly into Vicky and Robin, but the demo dogs fall them down too, and they seem to have them cornered. They all run into the laundry room, hoping to find their way out. Vicky closes a door to keep the monsters away, but the door on the other side, I think the door they were trying to get through, seems locked. And the door that Vicky closed doesn't seem like it's going to hold up all that much longer. This was a great shot. From the moment Lucas and Max came out of the elevator to the moment they realized that their exit was locked was another one of these great oners where it all is one shot, or at least it's all made to look like one shot. I love these. But while I was loving what I was seeing, Vicky, Robin, and Lucas, not so much. They're basically cornered. All they can do is hide behind some machines, but you can see that they are terribly, wickedly frightened.
I'm really sorry. I thought you were a turkey. I'm sorry for lying to you for like a ludicrously extended period of time. For the record, I wasn't lying about Ansel's. And if by some miracle we survive this, I'm going to take you there. And we are getting dessert. Deal.
I love that Vicky realizes that Robin was telling the truth, even though she was lying about it for a long time. She was telling the truth, and she's not a junkie. The demos break down the door, and Robin can't help but notice that that radio playing Kate Bush is a dead giveaway to where they are. It might be harder to understand them when they're whispering and you can't see their lips moving, but Robin's like, we have to turn it down. And Lucas is like, we can't. She's coming back. And then we see back in Camazotz that Holly helped Max get through the rubble. They are now so close to escaping.
You ready to go home, tourist?
They've made it through the mineshaft. They've made it through Henry's deepest, darkest, and scariest memory. And now they start walking towards their freedom. In the hospital, the three demodogs are slowly making their approach. I'm thinking, maybe Lucas, turn the radio down just a little bit and put it closer to her ear? The three demos are now only a couple feet away in a scene that totally reminds me of the raptors in Jurassic Park. Like the ones, you know, before they were heroic and Chris Pratt could talk to them and all that stuff. They get so close, but then they get distracted by a buzz. And a dryer that turned on. The three monsters are drawn to the noise like a moth to a flame. They get right up to it, but do not realize that tumbling inside the dryer is not sheets from a room upstairs. It's an oxygen tank. We get a like a curious dog, and then boom. Bada, bada, boom. Dead demo dogs everywhere. Robin, Vicky, and Lucas all get up and come around to survey the aftermath, where through the smoke, they see their hero. They see their savior. They see a pissed off, determined mother. They see Karen motherfucking Wheeler. I'm sorry. Emotion got the better of me. That's how I felt when I first saw it. That's how I felt when I watched it again and took notes. That's exactly what I wrote. I didn't write beep. I didn't write fudge. I said it. I recorded it. I felt it. And I meant it. But for the safety of your ears, I added that little beep in there just because I couldn't think of anything else to say. I mean, I probably could have said something, anything else, but it wouldn't have felt the same as it felt when I wrote those words and when I said those words. And I still mean it. And I think it deserves it. So that's why I said it. So we leave the hospital and go to Kamazots for our last moments of this episode. But I wanted to note that I loved Karen, her kind of like her growl when she came, like she's upset and she's angry and she wants to know where the hell her daughter is. And she knows these creatures. She's seen them before. One of them almost killed her. One of them took her daughter. So it probably also felt very satisfying to kill three of those a-holes. Look at me censoring myself now. Kill three of those things. And just like she is just, you could see she's frustrated with her, like that she can't talk and that she can't, she couldn't save her daughter, but she sure as hell could save these three kids, four kids. And she did. And there's a fifth kid, her kid, who in a way she may have indirectly helped herself, not even knowing it. We head back to Kamazots and Max and Holly are making their way through looking for a way out. Then Max sees her window. She sees Lucas still carrying her. She's probably like confused, like, wait, does he carry me around the hospital every day? Because she has no idea what's going on in the hospital right now. Holly is also ready to go, but Max tells her, and this must have been devastating, like, oh no, you can't go with me. This is my way out. It leads to my body, not yours. Like, Holly has to find her own way out. Now, I've seen some memes, like, joking about how long Max was talking here, and I guess it's funny. I get it, but give me a break. Holly is a little kid. Okay, she is not the same age as Max. She is not the same age as Mike. She is a youngin', okay? A little kid who helped Max escape this hellish portal. Do you expect her to just leave this kid here and not try to help her a little bit? Look, good luck, Holly. I'll see ya, and let me run back that hill and run back to Lucas, and you can go screw yourself. No, no, she has to help her. She has to help her figure her way home. She doesn't need Kate Bush. She doesn't even know Kate Bush. That doesn't even matter. She needs to find her way. She needs to find her own something, something to connect her to the real world. Imagine if Tiffany started playing right there. That would have been awesome. But it's not music. It never had to be music. And it's not a boyfriend. Max suggests to Holly, it's Holly the heroic. What about that? Holly says, no, that's just a toy. And even though Mike said Holly the heroic never gets scared, so when something scary happens, Holly could become her, she never did. She said, I couldn't save my mom. I couldn't save myself. And when Henry attacked you, I just stood there. And Max is like, what? Like, there's nothing you could have done in any of those moments, all right? You're smart. You really think you could stop those monsters with a fire poker?
And I think you're leaving a few important things out. The day that we met, you went into the woods, even though Henry told you that dangerous monsters live there. And then you followed me into the cave, even though you had no good reason to trust me. And then when I told you to go back to Henry, to go back into danger, you didn't hesitate. And today, when I gave up, you didn't. I've been here for so long, Holly. So long. And I can never make it out. But you found a way through Kamazots. Because of you, I get to see my friends. I get to see Lucas. You saved me, Holly Wheeler. You saved me. So you see, Holly the heroic is not just a toy. She's you, Holly. She's you.
And something about those words seemed to inspire something in Holly to realize that Holly the heroic is who she actually is. That is her connection back to the real world. And with that belief, a window opened back to Holly in the real world in Vecna's lair.
How did you know that would work?
I didn't. You still have a long journey ahead. I don't know where you're gonna wake up,
but I figure Vecna's holding you in the Upside Down. But remember, the Upside Down, it's just like Hawkins. So find your way back to your house and hide there. We will come and find you, okay? On the other side.
On the other side.
They separate and both slowly head towards their windows, their exits, their bodies, and then they start to run. They run faster. They run harder. Back to their lives. Back to their friends, back to their families, back to reality. They're running up that hill, they're running to safety, they're running to their freedom. And then we fade to black. And the last thing we hear is Max's heart monitor. Now she's not connected to that thing anymore. So, really, I think it just represents that her heart is still beating, that she's still alive, and that she's going to find her way home. But we don't see it in this episode. No, no, no. We fade to black just as Holly and Max are escaping. Escaping from Kamazotz. So where we stand right now, they assume that wherever Holly's being held, she's probably in the Upside Down. And it's just like the real world. So Max told her, go to your house and wait for us there. And that actually seems like a really smart idea. So as they both run back to themselves, we now know that Robin, Vicky, and Lucas are okay. And Karen is doing better. Mike, Hopper, Joyce, Will, and Eleven, I think they might be all headed their way in the hospital. Jonathan and Nancy didn't drown in the melted building. And Steve didn't fall to his death, thanks to Dustin holding him back. And nobody gives a shit about Ted Wheeler. I don't know where he is. I want to know. I want him to be okay. But I have no idea. As I finish recording this episode, it is already Tuesday, December 30th. I really hope to get this next episode out to you before the ball drops on New Year's Eve. And by that, I mean before the final episode of Stranger Things comes on Netflix. Because really, that marks the end of the year. I mean, yes, I know there's the whole midnight thing, but really, the true end that we're all thinking about is not 2025, it's Stranger Things 5. So my hope is I'm going to be up again doing this late for you guys tomorrow night and get another episode out to you as soon as possible. But until then, I want to thank everybody again for sending in comments. I will get to them. It might not be until the finale, but we can go through everything then, and some of the stuff will be old news by then, and some of it will be old theories by then. But who knows? Maybe I'll get to it sooner. But I do want to let you know that I do see it, and I do appreciate it. And I like seeing people having conversations with each other in there. So that's kind of cool, too. I can just sit back and say, hey, let the Stranger Things talk about things. That is fun. I enjoy seeing that. So thank you for doing that. And again, I hope to be back once again tomorrow with the final before the final. But until then, you can follow me on all the socials at Geek Mentality, except TikTok, which is Geek Mentality Mike. The Facebook page we have is Fans.Experts. The YouTube channel is Fans.Experts. Now, none of Stranger Things 5 is up on Fans.Experts YouTube channel yet, but it all will be released soon. And the website for all my other podcasts is fans.experts.com. It's actually for all my podcasts. But if you just want to go to Stranger Danger, you can just go to StrangerDangerPodcast.com. And you can follow StrangerDangerPodcast.com on Blue Sky and StrangerDPod on Twitter, even though I still feel like I'm forgetting to post things there. But that's all right. That's okay. The important thing is these episodes are getting out to you and you guys are finding it. And I truly, truly appreciate it. So I will be back soon. Hopefully sooner. Maybe even soonest. I don't even know if that makes sense, but I will be back very, very soon. But until then, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. Stay Stranger, my friends. And justice for Ted Wheeler! Where's Ted?
Fans, not experts.